Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. Today's episode is talking about a changing church, and we're going to get some very key church members' perspectives that are from Southern Hills, and hopefully it'll be a blessing to our audience here today.
Yeah, this is episode 192, bro.
Like 192.
You know, what do we do with that? Why are we spending so much time doing this? This is a lot of time. That's 192 hours worth of content.
Yeah.
Or so.
I agree.
Yeah.
And even more time editing and more time on you brainstorming.
Yeah. The editing time alone, how much time does it take you to edit an episode?
You know, it's really funny. This is going to go into the geeky side of what I do, but do you know how people like do this before? Well, there's that. But do you know when people speak?
I'm already asleep.
No, I get never mind.
No, no, please tell me. Go, go. I was kidding.
When people talk.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Hey, let's talk about idea night.
No, tell me. I want to hear. I really do. When people talk, I'm not going to do it. I promise.
This is a pet peeve.
Go.
And I've realized I do it sometimes.
Go.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
All of you have headphones on, so you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. There, before I start speaking a phrase, somebody goes, well, what I think is.
Oh, no, I hate that.
It's like lip smacks.
Yeah.
Like, man, I pick up on every one of those.
No good.
And I edit out all of them. And
do you us. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Pet peeves.
That's.
See, now what he's doing. He's doing it on purpose now.
It's more disgusting.
Time. Yeah. Idea night's coming up.
And, no, but how long does it take? How long does it take?
At least double the amount of time in the episode.
So, wow. So if the episode's an hour, it takes 2 hours.
Typically.
At least.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. Okay, that's all I needed to know. Why did we waste the time talking about? Oh, because I asked.
Right? You did.
I apologize.
We answer questions.
Hey, is Idea Night coming up?
Idea Night's coming up in September-ish.
Yeah, so only a few months away.
It's not September-ish. It's a specific night.
Yeah, it's September 19th.
September 19th.
All over the country, and you can participate. So if you're thinking to yourself, but I'm over here in Duluth, there's not an Idea Night near me. Yes, there is. All you got to do is go to the Idea Network website, ideanetwork.church, look it up, Idea Night locations. Now, if you do find that there's not one near Duluth, and you're like, man, I want to go, but the closest one's like 4 hours away, what do they do, Drew?
What does that tell you? Self?
Yeah.
Self, I need to be a host for the Idea Night in Duluth.
Yeah, look at yourself.
Yeah.
Or say it out loud. Self, you are the new host of the Idea Night.
In Duluth. We want to empower you to do that.
Yeah, that's right. You can actually sign up to be your own host and host ministry leaders from your own local location. Remember, Idea Summit provides idea roundtable conversations virtually every single week, yes, online, but also the Idea Summit, which is a national event that takes place every 2 years. Then there are Idea Days. Those are regional events that take place every year. But the local event is called Idea Night. National, regional, local. The local events are the Idea Nights, and you can host your own local event with your ministry leaders right there in your local context. So if you're a ministry leader and would like to get fellowship with the community of ministry leaders, contact us at engagement@ideanetwork.church, email us, and you can become a host for an Idea Night. So let's get into the episode. We're talking about a changing church. And we're not just talking about a changing church. We're talking about a changing church from a church member's perspective with Michael McConnell and Melanie Graves. Mike McConnell serves as the chairman of the deacon board here at Southern Hills and has seen Southern Hills grow from a few hundred people to the church that it is today.
Melanie Graves planted Southern Hills nearly 19 years ago and is your secretary. How long have you been the secretary for, Pastor?
We've been working closely together now for probably 8 years.
She deserves a medal.
Yeah, no kidding. And we call her an executive assistant, by the way.
Executive assistant, yeah, I do apologize.
Can we try to get this right?
Hey, Melanie serves as the executive assistant for Dr. Joshua Tice. Today we interview them to get a church member's perspective on a continually growing and consistently changing local church. Welcome to the podcast. Honestly, Mike, we've had you here before, but Melanie, this is your first time, so thanks. Yeah.
Let's have the audience learn a little bit about you. Mike, why don't we begin with you? Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, your family, and your connection to the church.
Sure. So I'll start with the church. I've been here about 14 and a half years. I'm married. I'll actually be married 28 years this year, which is hard to believe, as young as I am. I have two children, and I've been self-employed most of my life, starting businesses, and currently I'm the president of a technology company in the human resource space. And I do a lot of different things at church, aside, as you mentioned, from the deacon board, but discipleship and being on our finance committee and small groups, stuff like that. So been around for a little while.
Yeah, man, we love having you as long as you've been here. And Melanie, what about you? Introduce yourself to the audience and tell everybody about your connection in the church.
Yeah, I'm Melanie Graves. I'm married to Gary, my wonderful husband of 37 years. We have two adult children, Jessica, who's 29, Jonathan is 26. We've lived here in Las Vegas for 21 years. And as Pastor said earlier, we helped plant the church nearly 19 years ago. I've actually been employed here for a total of 10 years. I started out as the receptionist and am now his executive assistant.
Love it. And she's awesome. So as you can see, Drew, we've invited on two people that work very closely with me and our ministry here. Guys, what we're really wanting from you is you've had a front row seat to a changing church, not only changing as it relates to the amount of people that come, but building projects, philosophical changes, even methodological changes. People coming in and out of the church, some of those people being sent on to wonderful ministries, other people leaving not so happy about some of those changes. Mike, let's begin with you. What are the biggest and most substantial changes that you've noticed at Southern Hills over the years?
For me, I would say, obviously, the people change, but what that really means, I guess, is we've gone from, when I first came there, you had just gone to two services, roughly 200 people. And so as we've grown over the years to three services, and in some cases, four services, I think there's this dynamic of the people are changing, meaning they're there, but they're also going to different services. So that's been a huge thing. But also, I think a lot of the programs, people just fall in love with some of the things we've done over the years. I think of the Life Stage Development Program that we had, which was kind of like a Sunday school program based on the life stages that people were in. And seeing programs like that that have come and gone, and people really get attached to that, really get connected. But when you run out of space and you need to add more space, you have the ability to do certain ministry programs like that. So for me, I would say it's been a lot of things like that that we've just had to adapt as we've grown over the last, 10 to 14, 15 years and making those changes. Of course, there's been some other, things that have been probably challenging for some, and, the introduction of a completely different music program and instruments and things like that that has been very visible for the church, I think has been, pretty noticeable as well. Obviously, we have a larger stage now, so we've been able to expand our music program. And then just the nature probably of where we're at. I've just noticed over the years just the dress. When I first started coming, I think pretty much every man that came wore a suit and tie. And just little things like that have an impact, because some of those make people feel comfortable, some of them make people feel uncomfortable, and it's the balance of figuring how you make everybody feel welcome and comfortable in the church.
Mm. So these are the things that immediately you've kind of pick out. Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. These are the ones that I've noticed. What about you, Melanie? What are the biggest and most substantial changes you've noticed at Southern Hills?
The ones that first came to mind was music, as Mike said, dress, as well as Bible translation.
Those are a few changes over the years. And I think typically what we say is often what you win them with is what you win them to. So I used that a lot when I was dating, by the way. But for a church,
it worked out pretty well for you.
Somebody said I was a good salesman. So for us as a church, often sometimes people come to our church because you're that church in town, right? You're the church that reads out of a certain Bible version. You're the church that sings out of hymnals, that kind of stuff.
You're the church that has a certain dress style.
Yeah. So I think the question we have for you guys today is really, as the years have changed personally, how have you dealt with that, not only spiritually, but maintained your membership at Southern Hills, but also just loved the transition and going through it with us?
Yeah. Have you ever been worried about a change? Has there ever been one that you saw that you're like, ooh, I don't know how comfortable I am with that? Or I'm worried about how others might be comfortable with that. What has been your experience with that? Let's begin with you, Mike.
Yeah, I can remember one very specifically, and that's when we switched and basically started small groups. Quite honestly, I was nervous about it. I was also concerned about the church as a whole. It was such a new concept for us, and moving away from a traditional midweek service and a typical Sunday school service, that whole introduction. And I could see some angst on some others, at least in the leadership team, that were like, how is this going to work? And quite honestly, it might have been challenging at the beginning, but it's probably one of the best things that we did as far as connecting people to others, to connect them to the church and to God. But that stands out to me by far bigger than anything else we've done. They caused me probably the most concern initially because I didn't know what they were and then what everybody else might think.
How did you personally process that, Mike? Because you're a leader in your own right. You are a business owner. You're a great businessman in the community, but you love your church. You love your pastor. You love the church community. You're deeply connected with lots of people. How did you process the concern and the worry you were feeling about these changes?
Yeah, so for me, it goes back to something you said earlier, which is a church that is growing is constantly a church in transition, and the same is true in business. So for me to process that, I mean, it didn't happen overnight. It probably took me a few weeks of prayer and thinking through and realizing that we have to make some change. We couldn't keep doing what we were doing. And then just quite honestly, being open to the change and giving it a shot. And the way we did it, I can remember this too, you assigned me to be a small group leader, which really made me nervous because I had no idea what a small group was. And then to launch me into having to lead one, I'll never forget the first meeting that we had. I had no clue what I was doing. And it really did matter. Everybody really connected. So it just took me that time to think through that and understand that I had to tear down the walls that I built myself that says church is this. You have to have a Sunday morning, a Sunday night, and a Wednesday night service that's all about prayer. That's what church was to me. That's all I knew. And now to hear something completely different, I just had to wrap my mind around that change. But I experienced that in my own life in business all the time. And I'm like, well, if it works and I have to do that in business, why wouldn't that work in church when we need to keep moving forward? So that's how I did it. It took a few weeks to do that. And obviously talking through that with you and with some other pastors and some of the other deacons to understand how they were processing it as well. So it helped to talk through it.
How about you, Melanie? Have you ever been worried about a change? You saw a change coming in the church. And how did you deal with it? How did you process it personally?
Yeah, not any specific change, but I think since I've been in ministry, basically since I've been out of high school, some of it went back to preconceived notions from other ministry experiences I've had in the past. So one of the things I did is I talked to my husband, actually even asked him, you know, do you want to consider trying another church? How comfortable are we with this? All in all, I spoke to you a couple of times about it as well. And ultimately, we came down to as long as the gospel is still being preached, we were going to stay here and give it a try. And I must say, the first time I heard probably a hymn with an upbeat tone, it just was like a stab in the heart. But then now, I love those songs. And I think it's just an adjustment period that it takes for everyone as the changes are being made. So we love it here and are glad we stayed.
Talk about that feeling. Unpack that a little bit. I think that's important for pastors to sense and know the feeling that some of the flock are feeling. You said a stab in the heart. That's very visceral. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's just, I think the slower you can go as you make these changes, because even though you may have been praying about these changes and know in your head where you're going, maybe your staff are on board and maybe not all the staff know. But you have to remember that the flock doesn't have that same, they haven't had time to process everything like you have. And so it just takes a while. And it's not that they're wanting to be judgmental or anything, but honestly, they have questions because I remember there were times where, from where we first started, it almost seemed like we were doing a 180. Mm. And so that just kind of leaves the church member like, what's going on? If we were preaching the Bible this way years ago, the Bible hasn't changed, so why are we changing? Mm. So it just takes a while to process that. So I would say, you know, you just need to be patient with your people. Go slow. So just not to capsize the boat, so to speak. And if you go too fast, you're going to throw a few people out.
That's a great story. There's a story that's told about Henry Ford and his marketing team. And they were working tirelessly for months to revamp all of their marketing for the current car that they were trying to come up with, whatever. And eventually, Henry Ford walked into the office one day and he's like, when are we going to stop this marketing campaign? I'm done with it. Like, I'm just tired of it. And they're like, we haven't even launched this yet. And I think it's a great point that, you know, so often as leaders, we have so much going on in our heads underneath the hood, so to speak, either with our, you know, trusted advisors or smaller team that will be implementing those changes, that by the time it's actually ready to launch for the general public, sometimes we had to realize, like, okay, this is the first time they're hearing it, right? We've been mulling this over for months, maybe even years sometimes, especially when God's dealing with something you're specific in your heart as a pastor, that sometimes, like, we got to remember, like, oh, there's an adaptability curve there. And sometimes it takes a little bit for the, like, to Melanie's point, for them to be patient to roll it out.
Yeah, in our last two episodes ago, we were talking about processing criticism based upon implementing change. And we talked about conviction and courage. But we might want to adapt that even more and say, you need to have conviction. You need to have courage. You also need to have empathy. And as a shepherd, truly, I love, Melanie, what you were stating about truly thinking through what the flock is feeling that they haven't had that opportunity of processing. Mike, I'd be interested in your perspective on that part of the conversation about the maybe lack of perspective that a shepherd might have of what the flock is feeling in the midst of change.
Great point. And I think this is where it's important for the shepherd to perhaps listen to the lay leaders and some of the other staff and make sure they have a pulse of the church. They may think they do, and they very well may do, but there are also times where I think a lot of church members will come to the lay leadership and share things that they're concerned about that would never get to the staff or the senior pastor. And so I think there can be a lot that can be gleaned from that to help understand that in that decision-making process to push a change out. And what you said is really important too, is being empathetic. You can't please everybody no matter what change you make. So if you try to do that, you're going to have a nightmare because it's impossible to do that. You have to do what God's leading you to do, but you have to also, I think, implement those kinds of things in a way that really takes into account the vast majority of the people that are coming in. If you make a change that 75% of your church population is going to go against, you're not going to have a church the next day. The next week, you'll have 25% show up, and that's going to be a challenge. So I think seeking that counsel, and though that may not be in an effort to change your mind about moving a change forward, but also understanding just where the people are at and making sure you've read that right. And then if so, or if not, how do you adjust the messaging behind that to make sure that it's made clear so you can address some of the concerns up front before the change is actually made.
So, Mike, I think that's interesting. I'd love to hear Drew's perspective on this as I push back on Mike and invite Drew to this part of the conversation. And that is, how does a pastor maintain leadership and be able to genuinely say before God, I'm the leader, you know, I'm supposed to be the leader. And he's struggling with his own insecurity, his own lack of confidence, but he knows what God wants him to do. But at the same time, seeking counsel from good men and women in the church, how does he lead and also listen? Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, part of that is, I think, communication. And I think it's making it clear to the lay leaders and others that obviously the decision is yours and where God's leading you. I think you have to make that abundantly clear. And when you're asking for that input and feedback, it's really related to, is there a way I could maybe message this differently and all that? It's not that if you're at that point and you believe God is really calling you to make this change and move this church in the direction, then there should be nothing that stops you. You're the leader. That's what God has called the pastor to do. So it's not seeking that counsel in I guess, second guessing it. Let me say this. I do this all the time in business. Okay. I think I know where I want to take the company and I'm really clear about it. And I know the direction I'm going to go. So I'll meet with my leadership team and explain the changes and then what's the impact of the company. But never once am I ever thinking they're going to change my mind because I'm already convinced that's the way I'm going to do it. The questions that might come back to me are, when am I going to do it? And the exact messaging before I make the change. So the leadership is there. And I think a wise leader is taking in that counsel Again, not for the purpose of hoping someone changes your mind, or if they did, then that's probably a time for more prayer and counsel. But that's, I think, a very strong sign of a strong leader, is that they're willing to listen to others. But you have to filter that through with what God's calling you to do. He's the ultimate one you got to follow, not somebody else, walking around on the campus church or whatever. It's you having to follow what God's called you to do and getting your message across. And we did this, go back to small groups, because I thought you did this very well at Southern Hills when we made this change. We had some men that really, really questioned it. And you did a really good job of explaining the why behind it and caused us to spend the next week praying about it. When we met up again, we understood the why that much more clearly now. And then it turned into, we're not really pushing back on what you were trying to do. It was, how can we help you get this message out and do it properly? And how do we make small groups successful? That just happens to be an example, but that's what I think you did very well as a leader. And that's that give and take of listening versus driving something so hard. There's a lot of wisdom to be had in taking the time to do it, even if it takes a little extra time to do that, by listening to the folks that are closest to you and those that are, I think, closest to the congregation and have a pulse on what's going on.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, Mike. I think there's two more things I kind of add to that. I think about equity is built for the big decisions and how you execute the small ones. So in other words, like a pastor or ministry leader might be thinking of these huge monumental things for us that we seem as huge or monumental: Bible versions, language, dress, like music, all this kind of stuff, right? Well, if God, you feel like, is leading you to make those big pillar changes, so to speak, equity with your people is built in the smaller changes and how well you execute those in the meantime. So like what Mike is talking about, explaining the why, getting people's buy-in, all those things will help in the smaller choices that you make, know that you have a proven track record of following God's will for your life. And that's where you're taking the direction of church. So when you enroll like a bigger, like foundational one, it's easier to follow because you already have this track record of success going forward, saying like, this is what we're going to do and this is where we're at. And I think to Mike's point too, like you're never coming to the whoever it is, deacons, elders, whoever their church might be, as like, it's an optional thing that we're doing this. Like, no, like God's told me we're going this direction. What I need from you is like, where's the potential landmines that I don't see? Who's the person I need to talk to? Who's the person I need to give this why to and have a little more conversation so that it might go smoother? Because I think both of those things are really important when you're trying to make changes, especially.
We've led sometimes successfully, and then we've also implemented change not so much. Drew, talk about a time where
this is your classic story, yeah.
Yeah. Talk about when I've been dumb.
Okay. I don't like to criticize people. It's not like wife and I, yeah.
But you should, for the sake of our audience.
So for the sake of our audience, there was one time where, and I'm pretty sure Mike and I would be in the same boat, that we found out that Southern Hills was going to acquire a new satellite campus in a deacon's meeting. Like, in other words, like, it wasn't like, hey, this is 6 months down the road, this is what we're thinking about doing. Like, no, like next week we're starting this. We're like, did I miss a meeting? Like, I know I've been on vacation a couple of times, but like, did I miss something? And so I was like, Josh, like, what do you mean? Like, we're starting Green Valley. He goes, yeah, we're starting Green Valley. I'm like, when, like, did we decide this? And basically from there, like, this is a term that I rolled out with Fred and Josh, both of them, I think it helped over the years. And I heard this from another pastor, but it just is the concept of having a view, a voice, and a vote. So in other words, there are times in ministry where you want people to know what you're doing. That's giving them a view of what you're doing. If you want their advice or you want their counsel or their wisdom on it, that's giving them a voice. But if you want their vote, that's an entirely different avenue. And sometimes we don't, like even you, when you're coming to me, like I don't get a vote in the matter, but you care about what my voice has to say. And I think knowing which stage you're at when you're trying to implement change is very important, because, and make sure the person you're talking to knows which one you want. Like, so no, like, don't get confused. I don't want your vote on this. You can tell me whatever you want. It's not going to change the outcome, but I highly value your voice in the matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I want our audience to know just that. Like, you're listening to a team right now who have made some changes successfully and made others not so successful. And you did tell me, I think, throughout that interaction, you said, Josh, as a friend, you're like, Josh, the only times I really see you screw up is whenever you get something in your mind and you just do it. without without talking to anybody. And that was very gracious of you to be bold enough with me as your pastor to say that. And it's 100% true. So we've screwed this up often. The very first time I remember having this screw up was with Melanie, your husband. Gary served as our first treasurer. And do you know which story I'm going to tell? There's a lot of them.
I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was the balloon. And the first year of
She's laughing very hard right now.
The first year of the church, I was like, there were a bunch of new home developments being built around Southwest Las Vegas, and they had these giant red advertisement balloons that said, this is where the new homes are. And I thought, ooh, that'd be cool to have a giant helium balloon 150 feet above our church building saying Southern Hills right here, or church right here. And so I'm like, that's awesome. Let's buy one. I found out they were $1,000, and I bought it.
Just you?
Not with my money.
Oh, okay.
With the church
but
money.
But like you held like a meeting, talked about the deacons, I and said, this is what you're going to do, and took it out of your marketing budget. And
what budget? There was no budget. There was a pastor with a call of God on his life to buy a balloon.
That's great.
And so I went out and I bought this balloon without thinking through any details. Realized I needed tethering rope, which was going to be expensive. I needed two containers of helium to fill it just once. When I say containers, I'm talking about 6 foot tall containers, two of them to fill it once. You know how expensive those are? So I already bought the balloon without having that.
Sure.
And so
$1,000 just gets you the balloon.
Right.
Right.
And so this huge, and you got to understand that we had what, 80, 100 people going to the church. We didn't have $1,000. So Gary says to me, he's like, you bought a balloon? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, is it true it cost $1,000? And I remember saying, yes. And he's like, well, don't you think you should have talked to somebody? And I was so insecure. I remember just being so insecure and being like, I'm the pastor of this church. I don't know what I said. I was probably a little jerk. And he was just patient with me and said, you know, what probably be best is for you to, you know, sure, talk to the treasurer to see if number one, we have $1,000 in the account for a balloon. And then he said something interesting. He said, there are other people that know about advertising, you know, better than you know about the Bible. Like, why don't we ask those people about how to better advertise? And well, that balloon lasted for a total of, do you remember, Melanie? Go ahead, say it. How long did it last?
Maybe 5 minutes.
Oh, five minutes.
Oh boy.
We put the balloon, tell what happened. Do you remember? We put the balloon, we filled it with helium. We had a church party that night. I think it was the night of the Christmas party. And we put it up and there was a windstorm. Mm. The windstorm knocked it down and it burst in one night. One night. And so for years, we've had among the early members of the church the story of Pastor's $1,000 balloon.
But the impressions in that 5 minutes of Southern Hills from the driving night tell you it's off the charts.
We have so many souls that were saved.
So many. Hey, so we'll steer the conversation a little differently now. We want to hear from you, both of you. What if you have had friends or family members that they just couldn't take the change? In other words, it was whatever was happening was too much. You know, it was too extreme, or maybe they just like, hey, like I've seen too many at this point in time. Like, I think I'm just going to go elsewhere. Like, what did you do? What did that conversation look like?
I personally just encouraged them to do whatever they felt God leading them to do. And I can think about three people right now, right off the bat, but the main thing is to maintain the relationship that you have with them, not to burn the bridges. They just make be at the point where they don't fit into your ministry any longer, and you don't want to hold them in being able to go to where they feel God calling them to.
That's a great point. I think it's really important to, you know, not throw stones as they leave or criticize them in some way, shape, or form or whatever. But
because they may come back.
Yeah.
You never know.
Very true.
And we've seen that, haven't we?
We have.
We've had some come back and we've had some move on. And I think if you're a ministry leader listening to this, hearing Melanie say that, which again, I told Mike and Melanie, I don't want to know what your thoughts are. Here's the questions ahead. I want you to just be honest. Well, what do you want us to say? Say what you want to say. And I'm so glad you have that answer, because ministry leaders need to hear, you should not pressure your people to cut people off just because they're going to another ministry. That is not biblical separation. Just because they're not going to your church, because you change something that their conscience won't allow. And I think a lot of times ministry leaders do feel so insecure, they, in an ungodly way, overly pressure their church members to not maintain those relationships. And those relationships are incredibly important, aren't they, Melanie?
Exactly. I have a lady right now who still comes back and purchases cards from the card shop because of that relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And so I would say not only don't discourage that, encourage it. Encourage the continuation of the understanding that we are just one church in the city and that God is at work far broader than just your local congregation.
Yeah. How about you, Mike? Any friends or family members that...
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what Melanie said is so key. And just to add to that is it's really not the time to argue with them or try to state the position of the church or your pastor as to why they're wrong and we're right and they're leaving. It's really an opportunity, I think, to hear their concerns. And if the door is open, maybe you could share a little bit more of the heart of the pastor of why the change is happening, why the church has gone that direction. But if not, you just maintain friendships with them, and it's not the end of a relationship. It just might happen to be a short-term time they leave, and who knows, something else could bring them back. So I think it's really important to make sure that the communication's open with them and let them know that you still love them and care for them and are thinking of them. And for me, I've had a few, and I still reach out to them periodically and let them know I'm thinking of them. And we still get together, some of us, a couple times throughout the year. And so we've maintained that relationship for those that have left. It's hard to see them go. But again, it's certainly not the chance or the time to argue and make them feel guilty about something when, if it's their conviction and they feel God leading them somewhere else or whatever the reason may be, you have to let them go.
Yeah, it's a great point. So now we want to really give you both a platform to speak into the pastor on the other side of this mic, so to speak. You know, if you were to, you know, have a one-on-one conversation, you know, with a pastor, and you could tell them anything or give them advice about making changes in their church and how it might potentially affect the flock, like, what advice would you give to them in this situation if they're considering some of these more you know, change type things that the church sees? Like, what advice would you give to them in that situation?
I was just going to say, I said earlier, but I would just implement the changes slowly. Explain, if you can, the reasoning behind your decision to make these changes, especially if you've been going a totally different direction. Because if they can understand the heart of the pastor and why these changes are being implemented, they're going to come more in line to follow suit. Expect questions. There's going to probably be a lot of questions. And I also noticed a lot of people would make comments to me, or as Mike said, I believe earlier, maybe the lay leaders that they wouldn't bring to a pastor. So even if you go to make these changes, make sure that all your staff are aware of the changes, even down to the receptionist that answers at the front desk in case someone calls in and asks a question or whatever, so that they better know how to respond to people. And just allow your flock time to adjust to the changes that you're wanting to make.
Yeah, I would just add to that, you know, and I'm sure everybody knows this, but you have to understand that people don't like change. And so you really have to manage how you disseminate the change. And so just to add on to what Melanie said, I would, aside from even your lay leaders, I would go to the people in your church that have the most influence on others in the church, meaning it doesn't have to be somebody on a leadership team or a small group leader or anything of that nature. But who do you see in your church that is like very connected and talks to a lot of people?
Maybe your core.
We have a lot of those in our church.
Your core members.
Yeah, they have, like, meaning if you get if you get them on board and help them understand the why, then they can help get that message out. I think one of the key things that could be done, and we've done it, Pastor Tice has done this, I think, so well in our church that's really worked. So this is, you know, experience from one church, but it's worked for us, is finding a way to leak the change. So meaning you've got your staff on board with it. They know the why. They know your heart behind it. You've got your lay leaders, your deacons and all that, your small group leaders behind it. They understand why. They may not agree with the change, but when you leave the meeting explaining it, they need to be supportive of it. They need to know the message that you want to share to everybody, so everyone's saying virtually the same thing. Then find ways to leak it. So that could be on a Sunday night service, maybe in a small group, let your small group leader start talking about it. so that, you know, maybe a month out or so, this has worked well for us, that people can start to ask questions. And then before you know it, it's not such a big shock on the day that you have this big quote unquote change that was announced. You already have maybe 40 or 50% of your church population already heard something about it. It helps soften depending on what the change is. If you're changing curtains in the building, you know, not such a big deal. If you're going to introduce certain instruments in the band or something like that, that might be a bigger deal, but it's worked really well for us to leak it. And so the way we do it, it just starts with the staff, then the deacons know about it, then small group leaders know about it, and they start discussing it in small groups. And then the day you make the change, it's not near the shock and awe that people might think it is. So that's really been helpful. And I would encourage those to think through that. How do you get people to understand change is coming? Communicate. You cannot over communicate that. That's probably the most important thing they could do.
Yeah, it's a great point, Mike. And I want to make sure we leave this episode on a positive note. And to use your terminology, leak information, right? So this is a time when we did this really well, and specifically you and Fred and the rest of the staff. Sometimes the most practical thing as a ministry leader you as pastors can do for the church, or as deacons or lay leaders or whatever, is literally just go through the calendar and like give people a heads up on what might happen. So the specific example is this, right? This was years ago at this point, but we were in a deacons meeting and we're going through the calendar, and you had given us a heads up in a couple of weeks we're having baptism Sunday. And in this particular situation, we had chose that Heather was going to baptize a lady. And you gave us the information about this lady that she's baptizing. A, Heather discipled and she, you know, led her to Christ. But also this lady had been a lot of like domestic abuse in her background, and to have a man touch her in any way would have triggered lots of past bad negative emotions, right? And you told us that, and you know, kind of like almost like a side comment in a deacon's meeting. And then, you know, a few weeks later it happened. Literally the next week in my small group, I had a small group member in my small group like come to me very concerned about like, are we making these huge drastic changes at Southern Hills to implement like women leadership and all this kind of stuff. And that was an opportunity for me to literally walk them through that, because I had already had the information leaked to me weeks before about why the vision of that specific thing that happened. And I think if I didn't have that, I would just like, I would try to have a good poker face and make something up on the spot,
right,
to make the church or you look good. But I wouldn't have known,
yeah,
really the reason why behind that. So
the message I would like to end with to our listener is, if you're a pastor and you're thinking about implementing change, one of the greatest temptations is to not trust the people that are closest to you. And I don't know why we do this other than the devil lies to us. And we think to ourselves, well, if they have a question or they have a concern, they're against me and they're against what God wants to do. Therefore, if they're against God, they're on the side of the devil. And in reality, you have Michael McConnell's and you have Melanie Graves and you have Drew Palencia's in your church who really love you. And proper communication with them includes you telling them ahead of time, but also proper communication is when they come and it may feel like a confrontation, but they come and talk to you. And they say something like, you know, it would have been really good if we had that information prior. And, you know, it would have been really nice if we would have discussed that. They're not attacking you. They're not attacking God's vision. God is using them to help you lead better. Trust the men and the women that God puts into your life. Trust that they love Jesus like you love Jesus, that they want to follow your leadership. But sometimes, let's be honest, you're not a great leader and you don't properly communicate every time. So listen to the people God has put into your life. And what you'll find is they become the greatest cheerleaders for you, and they become the greatest players with you. And they understand some people will not be able to move with you through all of these changes, but they'll be behind you through them, and they'll help others understand why these changes are taking place. So today, we've been talking about a changing church from a church member's perspective. Melanie, Mike, thank you so much for joining Drew and I on this podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We really appreciate your perspective that you offered, and hopefully, you know, pastors and ministry leaders out there today that are listening can glean valuable insight from your years of wisdom here at Southern Hills and everything that you guys have seen since its inception. So we appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.